In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know. LeBron, what's your decision?
This fall, man, this is very tough. And this fall, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach and join the Miami Heat.
Miami Heat. That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
That was the conclusion I woke up with this morning.
Well, good evening, everyone. All rise. Welcome to another episode of Basketball Court, the only podcast where we litigate the great disputes of NBA history. There are many basketball courts in this country, but there's only one basketball court. That slogan would be a lot better if you could see the capital B and the capital C. Welcome to the program. I am Peter Andrews. I'm the judge here in basketball court, and I am joined, as always, by our counselors. Please welcome Sam Tidings.
Greetings, everybody. It's been a long time.
And defending champion, Miles Johnson.
Hey, y'all. RIP to Kerry Fisher one time. Put one in the air for the real one.
Yes, we're pouring one out for Kerry Fisher. All the drops and stuff we did for this episode, they're Star Wars themed, but that's because we originally thought this was going to be recorded like a week and a half ago, close to Rogue One. And now it's just in memoriam.
And Kerry Fisher died, and now it's
still timely. It's the thing about Star Wars, it always finds a way to be timely.
That is what they say about Star Wars, you know, over the years, is they just say it's how timely it is, right? That's what really brings us all together. And then we have the long, awkward silence. Let's do basketball court, which has nothing to do with Star Wars. We're going to talk about one of the most exciting non-basketball moments in the last decade of the NBA. Didn't have anything to do with balls being dropped on the court. It had a lot more to do with what one man said in a ill-advised ESPN special. Today on Basketball Court, we're going to go back and revisit the decision.
You know, it's no way that, you know, just hindsight, I would have never, you know, called up Larry, called up Magic and said, hey, let's get together and play on one team.
Like Michael Jordan, you know, he never left Chicago. Kobe Bryant, you know, but he didn't bolt when he had a chance. He wanted to stay and win in L.A.
You were the chosen one. It was said that you would destroy this and not join them. Bring balance to the force.
That's right, the chosen one, LeBron James, who announced on live television that he was going to go to South Beach and play for the Miami Heat and cause his jersey to be burned in effigy all over Ohio. Of course, it turned out to have a happy ending for everyone 6 years later when the Cavs came back and won the 2016 title. But to this week on Basketball Court, we're going to look at two alternate possibilities. What if LeBron had re-signed with the Cavs, and what if LeBron had taken the bright lights of the Big Apple? So we have Miles and Sam getting ready to go. We are, as always, do a coin toss. We're using a Canadian 25-cent piece today. It has the queen on one side and a moose on the other side. Sam, which side do you want?
I want the moose. Moose never fails.
And it is moose. It is moose, so you have the choice to take the ball or to defer to the second half.
I will defer, and I'll let Miles LeBron stay in Cleveland first.
All right, we have Miles Johnson gonna keep LeBron in Cleveland. Let's get it going. Fire away.
So may it please the court, Your Honor.
Good start,
and my esteemed colleague. So basically, the initial condition that I have here is that yes, LeBron, in this same ill-advised ESPN special, decides that instead of breaking the hearts of thousands and thousands of Ohioans, that he decides to stay put in Cleveland. And I wanted to explain a little bit, just really briefly. I mean, I think the reason that he would have done this is that we know about LeBron that he's like notoriously sentimental. He's somebody who has played at this point all but the years that he spent in Miami playing basketball in Northeast Ohio. And I think, like, outside of his, like, very public and, like, very, like, well-documented friendship with Dwayne Wade, there wasn't anything sort of pulling at him in the same way that being able to deliver a championship home to Cleveland would have. I don't think he would have gone to New York. I think when we read profiles by, you know, Lee Jenkins and stuff, saying that, you know, LeBron is very much chasing Michael Jordan's legacy, I think that rules out places like Chicago. I really do think it was between Cleveland and, like I said, because he was best friends with Dwayne Wade. Came out of Cleveland, Miami, and just for the sake of this podcast being relevant, I, you know, said that he'd stay in Cleveland because the allure of playing with his best friend in the new city perhaps wasn't or didn't outweigh the positional benefit of bringing the title to Cleveland.
So do you think one of the big losers in this timeline is Lee Jenkins?
I think he definitely doesn't get that really splashy profile, and I also think he never gets the "I'm coming back" story either.
Which I
like really enjoyed reading. I don't know. Anyway, I think the biggest loser in this situation, though, perhaps unsurprisingly, is LeBron James. I mean, really quickly, you don't have the team that you had in Miami. I think that's that much is clear. That 2009-2010 team that would have lost to Boston in the Eastern Conference semis was just objectively not close to as good as his team was, any of them in Miami. So you're losing those two titles. But even if you just look ahead to the next couple of years, with LeBron on that Cleveland squad, they were winning anywhere between 45 and 60 games. And just if you split the difference, you know, just say that next year they finished 53-29, that would have made them fourth in the East behind Chicago, Boston, and Orlando. And one thing that I think is important, and I think perhaps the biggest takeaway from this entire timeline is that, you know, in the NBA, and especially because of how the draft works, and I think in all sports, though, the worst thing to be, right, is mediocre. You either want to be a title contender, or you want to be so abjectly terrible, right, that you can have a high number in the draft lottery. Being just the middle, just kind of middling, right, is the absolute worst thing to be. And, you know, I think if LeBron stays, Cleveland is sure good enough to, let's say, even win the East every year, but they're not good enough to sort of take that next step, and they wouldn't be good enough to take that next step, right, until they added Kyrie, until they added Kevin Love, until they, you know, sort of filled out, added some wings like Amon Shumpert and J.R. Smith. Like, you know, all those guys are crucial and critical. I mean, even if you have to look at just the difference between the Cleveland team that beat the Warriors in the finals and the one that didn't, right? So I think, like, the biggest loser here is LeBron. I think one thing that he does gain is he doesn't lose out that 2011 MVP to Derrick Rose, and everyone got mad that he left for South Beach, and he was sort of playing the role of the NBA's villain and lost. And Derrick Rose got that MVP that was based on, I think, largely the sort of protest vote. So he does get that. But I think that people, in a sort of ironic sort of twist of fate, I think that a lot of sports writers, I think a lot of people in sports media, and maybe, you know, anyone but diehard Cleveland fans, I think questions LeBron's decision. I think he got a lot of flack for, you know, ring chasing and not delivering on his promises that he made when he was 18 or whatever. But I think a lot of us go, well, he doesn't have any rings. He's now, what, 30 in Cleveland. No signs of anywhere closer to a championship. I think people start piling on him. And really, there's nothing for him to kind of counterbalance that with. There's no results that you see on the floor. There's, I mean, I think he still is very much one of the top-tier talents in the NBA, but I don't think the league belongs to him in the same way if he doesn't.
So in this timeline, Cleveland doesn't win a ring at all, and that's, I assume you're saying that the nucleus never comes together?
So, I mean, like, a big part of, and really the two biggest parts of this Cleveland nucleus, right, is Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, both of whom were only able to be acquired, right, because Cleveland was so terrible in the time that LeBron left. They were able to pick up the pick that ended up being Kyrie, that the number one pick that ended up being Kyrie, the number four pick that ended up being Tristan Thompson, and of course then the pick that they drafted Andrew Wiggins and then later traded for Kevin Love, the face of that franchise, you know, in that big three that is Kyrie, LeBron, and Kevin Love, literally doesn't happen if LeBron stays, because they don't get those draft slots. They don't get the number one and the number four in the Tristan Thompson draft. They don't get the number one spot for Anthony Bennett, which ended up not mattering, of course. And they don't get the number one for Andrew Wiggins either. So, no, I have Cleveland not winning any rings and not winning big in the draft either.
Can I make an objection and an observation?
Yeah.
Sure.
So, first, my objection, because I'm a stickler for the actual facts of stories, unlike my co-counsel. The pick that they used to select Kyrie Irving was the Clippers pick that they acquired via trade. It wasn't their own pick that they were so bad that they ended up with. The Tristan Thompson pick was the Cavs' own pick, and the Kyrie pick was actually the Clippers' pick when the Clippers won the lottery, but they had already traded their first unprotected. So they could have still...
That was a Baron Davis trade, right? Or am I imagining that?
Baron Davis or Mo Williams was one of those really crappy end-of-the-line point guards LeBron had at that point.
And that pick that they got from the Clippers would have been protected, would it not have been?
It was not. Why was the number one pick? It was unprotected.
Okay.
Because the Clippers are not known for their great management.
Your objection has been noted by the court.
Thank you.
What is the sustaining? What does that mean for?
It just means that I'm in my mental calculation, I'm going to give Sam a point for pointing that out.
All right. Okay. I got a mental 1 point lead. That's good to know.
Hey, it's like who's lying. You know, the points don't matter in the end.
They matter to me.
That's why you keep losing.
Yeah, my question, though, is obviously the decision as a TV special has been sort of mocked and decried because he left for Miami. How do you think the special, the TV moment, is viewed if it's just him saying, oh, yeah, I'm just going back to Cleveland?
Oh, it's totally different. It's like, do you remember, there was like a tornado or maybe a huge hurricane it would have been a tornado that touched down in Oklahoma, and Kevin Durant was out there like in warm-ups helping people remove the wreckage from their businesses and homes and stuff. It would have been like that, but times 50, because everyone would have said, oh my God, LeBron cares so much. Look at what he did for the Boys and Girls Club and Cleveland, and he stayed his whole life here. He's committed. But I think that would have worn off. You know, I think, like, all of that sort of, you know, goodwill or sort of just good favor, that something like that would have brought him for a year, maybe even 2 years. Let's say even 3 years. But after a while, like, people want you to win more than they will care to let on or more than they'll care to admit. That would have worn off. But I do think that it would have been looked at, like, the total opposite. Instead of being this thing that was just about his self-promotion, allegedly, it's this thing that is a celebration of all things Cleveland.
So then LeBron leaving was like a natural disaster, is what you're saying?
I'm saying that that is how it was received by people, for better or for worse. And I think, just to be clear on this, for worse, I think it's ridiculous to, you know, burn dudes' jerseys in the street like we're in a war-torn country or something.
Do you think that in war-torn countries they're burning dudes' jerseys in the street?
I think
they have LeBron jerseys in, like, Somalia?
Poop jersey in Crimea that they're just burning?
Yeah, all that I know of what's going on in all these war-torn countries is that they're just ripping up Darko Milicic's jerseys. Is that not... Are you telling me that?
They're burning the fake championship merchandise. So there's people out there who are, you know, they're burning Warriors repeat jerseys in the streets. You know,
for real. There are some little kids in some second world countries who are dead ass walking around with Golden Warriors 2016 NBA champs, and I think that's really sad.
I own a New England Patriots 2007 undefeated season Super Bowl champions T-shirt.
That's pretty cool.
That must be a great trolling thing to wear.
It is a fun thing to wear, and have Patriots fans be like, oh.
All right, Miles, let me ask you a question. You're sure. Well known for being,
if you will.
Yeah, you have no idea how courtrooms work, man. You're well known for being accursed with Washington Wizards fandom. LeBron staying in Cleveland, good for DC or bad for DC?
It would have been, I think, marginally. And I think that's the most important caveat here, is that everything is only, could be so much little or so much worse or so much better. I think it gets marginally worse for the Wizards, because I think if Cleveland isn't so bad in that 2012-2013 season, they don't get the pick that would have, that they used on Anthony Bennett. And I think Ernie Grunfeld definitely would have taken Anthony Bennett had he had the opportunity. Partly because we have a long history of taking big men who don't sort of round into their potential. And also because Orlando is really power forward heavy that year. Cleveland wouldn't have had that one slot. I'm just sort of banking or guessing, I guess I should say, that Washington ends up in that sort of top three position. And I think if Ernie Grunfeld had had the chance, we would have ended up with round part two.
Well, that doesn't sound ideal at all.
It's not like has been a godsend or anything.
I don't know. I read a thing on The Ringer today that said he was going to make the Hall of Fame next year, so.
What's The Ringer?
I don't know.
Wow.
I'm just kidding. I'm sorry.
It's a,
I'm really sorry, Bill.
Taking shots on our podcast.
Here's the thing.
It's a website for very tangential NBA takes.
Yeah, when you see my application turn up on the, you know, resumes pile or whatever, just don't remember any of this.
Okay, so podcast, so who wins from LeBron staying in Cleveland?
So it wouldn't be, of course, a basketball court production if I didn't have the Thunder winning at least one title. And I just think, for the sake of simplicity, we can have them win that 2012 finals that they would have played Miami. But, of course, without this power consolidation out east, they would have faced a team like Orlando or Boston or Chicago. And a lot of those teams were good and, you know, I think would have made the title game and made it out of the East. I don't think that they would have had what it would have taken to contend with Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden all healthy. I think other winners include guys like Kyrie Irving. I mean, I think if you don't put Kyrie Irving in Cleveland, right, and that alone at the time that he came would have been, like, worth being thankful for. I have Kyrie, like, I think he would have rounded into his own personally, like as an individual player, a lot faster than he did in Cleveland because of the sort of starters that were around him. I think in the end, of course, like now after he's won a title, I don't think that he would have been necessarily in that same position. But I do think in terms of the way that we talk about Kyrie and what type of player he is and whether he's a top five or top three, whatever, point guard, like, I don't think that ever would have happened because I would think we would have seen a much more rounded and complete Kyrie Irving. But I also think, in a sort of interesting thing, I'm very curious as to what y'all think about this. I think the Lakers would have really benefited from this, right? Everybody remembers the David Stern trade veto that would have sent Chris Paul to the Lakers, and that would have set up a situation where they would have had Kobe and Chris Paul and Dwight Howard at the same time. And
of course, three.
Right, and of course, with that trade veto, I mean, that is, I would argue, directly a consequence of what people saw in the league as guys sort of colluding, for lack of a better word, to create these super teams. If that doesn't happen in Miami, and I guess you could argue if it doesn't happen in Boston before that, there's no reason for David Stern to try to quell what is a rising tide around the league. So I think if LeBron never leaves, you all of a sudden have another, the makings of another dynasty out in LA, but not with the Clippers, the Lakers instead.
I mean,
so those are my big winners. I don't really have any. I think, like, largely things more or less stay the same. Oklahoma does a little bit better. Obviously, like, Miami's a big loser in this.
I do want to ask you about, there's one point in your brief that I think is interesting. Can you tell me what the effect would be on Ray Allen?
Yes. Okay, so another winner that I had in this were the Boston Celtics, right? Because if you take Miami out of the equation, again, that East is a lot easier sort of to beat because you don't have Dwayne Wade and LeBron on the same team. And I think, like, because of that, you don't have Doc Rivers sort of losing his job and kind of being exposed As perhaps not the great coaching mastermind that it looked as though he would have been, because he was winning all those rings in Boston. I think you know, Boston makes probably another 1 to 2 finals appearances, which like improves the Hall of Fame resumes of Pierce and Garnett and Ray Allen. But the thing with Ray Allen, you have to remember, is if LeBron never leaves to go to Miami, he doesn't make the series-saving three against the Spurs in the 2013 finals, which is, you know, not necessarily a huge hit to his legacy, but I do think it's one of the shots that he is remembered for, one of the shots that actually launched this podcast. So you could argue that if LeBron stayed in Cleveland, we would not have started this podcast, which is a podcast exception.
That is a dark timeline.
We've finally become the snake eating our own tail after all this time. Sam, do you have anything you want to ask Miles about before he wraps up?
So, I have one thing, and that is, so Doc Rivers stays with the Celtics. Does that mean Vinny Del Negro gets to oversee Lob City?
Well, Lob City, again, though, would not have technically existed, because you would have had Chris Paul in...
Does Vinny Del Negro get to oversee the rise of Blake Griffin?
Vinny Del Negro definitely does stay as the Clippers head coach. That's what you're asking.
See, and this gets back to a couple episodes ago. Does the Donald Sterling stuff come out? You know, there's a lot of these sort of tangential things happening here.
Because the thing is, if the Clippers are never as popping as they were because of Lob City and because Chris Paul was there, you don't have guys like Matt Kemp taking Instagram pictures with, what's the girl's name, V. Stiviano, and you don't have Donald Sterling getting told, because he's not on Instagram, right? Somebody told him Matt Kemp was taking a picture with his mistress on Instagram. So what if we just went all the way back and said that LeBron is the reason why Donald Sterling lost his basketball team?
See, I like to think that he does actually have that he's got an Instagram somewhere, that like this old crotchety Scrooge-like man actually does know how to work Instagram. That I think is funny.
I have one more question before Miles ends his turn, I guess. And that is, so you're saying that if LeBron stays in Cleveland, is Donald Sterling in Trump's cabinet right now?
If LeBron stays in Cleveland, Donald Sterling is the head of the LA chapter of the NAACP.
That's perfect. Okay.
Just so we're clear, that is what I mean.
Well, I'm glad we clarified that.
Imagine Donald Sterling heading up the NAACP, sliding into people's DMs on Instagram and shit.
All right, do you rest your case?
I do rest my case. I'm sorry, I've gone off the rails even more than usual.
No, you're good. All right, let's kick it over to Mr. Tidings for his saga of LeBron heading to a new city.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor, and also Miles, for your lovely LeBron Stays in Cleveland portion of the segment. So for my exercise to work, for all this to work, we just sort of have to assume that LeBron didn't collude with Wade and Bosch like years in advance to do this, and that he actually just woke up and was like, well, they're in Miami, I should go to Miami too, even if that's not actually what happened. So, naturally, with the decision taking place in beautiful Greenwich, Connecticut, so close to the home of the Knicks, LeBron chooses that spot to announce that he is joining forces with Amari Stoudemire in New York, that the Knicks are back, and that all of a sudden, it's his goal not to bring a title to, you know, championship-starved Cleveland, but to bring one back to New York where they haven't won in 40 years, since the 70s, since the Phil Jackson, DeBuscher, Willis Reed, Clyde Frazier teams. So LeBron joins the Knicks, and the first real effect from this is that there's a real balance of power in the East. Instead of sort of LeBron just carrying teams to titles with his super friends in Miami, that you have, like Miles said in his case, that Chicago's in a good position. Miami's still in a good position because they have Wade and Bosch. New York has LeBron, obviously, and Amare. The Celtics and the Magic still have Dwight. So there are plenty of good teams in the East, and it's not necessarily a cakewalk for LeBron to get to the finals year after year. And more importantly, that if you remember that 2010-2011 Knicks team, they started off so great because they were playing Stoudemire like 40-plus minutes a night before his knees just totally deteriorated, even before they traded for Melo. And when you have someone like LeBron on your team and all the depth that that team had with Gallinari and Wilson Chandler and the god Raymond Felton, of course, Mozgov, the whole crew, that they could afford to rest Stoudemire a lot more and I really think preserve his, at the very least, keep him viable later in the season than he was with that Knicks team where he was shot after like game one of the playoffs against the Celtics.
You don't think he was always a little bit sort of doomed to these injuries? I mean, it seemed like such a chronic condition with him.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a reason that the Suns couldn't get insurance on his knees. But at the same point, I think the way that D'Antoni was playing him, you know, essentially being a 30% usage rate guy with that cast of characters compared to with LeBron on the team and what he can do in terms of even just building leads on a night-to-night basis and giving Stoudemire rest, you know, giving him some fourth quarters off instead of having him play, you know, so many more minutes than he really needed to is something that, I mean, we're seeing now with so many guys taking days off or halves off or whatever and resting more, that it's something that LeBron is certainly a proponent of, and I think that it could have helped Amari out at least to the point where, you know, even in that season or the next season, he's able to play into the playoffs. And he's definitely not punching any fire extinguishers, that's for sure.
Okay, that was going to be my question. So I'm glad that there's no fire extinguisher punching, which means there's no Office Space meme of that happening either, right?
Yeah, which I guess hurts my case a little bit. But the reason that that all happened is that they were in Miami and the Heat were beating them so bad. They lost two games down there that he punched a fire extinguisher and broke his hand and was out for the rest of the playoffs. And clearly, if he's teamed up with LeBron and not competing against him and getting beaten by him, then there is no fire extinguisher Office Space Amari meme. No.
Yeah, I have another question about the Amari-LeBron team-up, and I realize putting you on the spot a little bit, but how would you say that, so having LeBron and Amari be on the same team, maybe Amari extends his career, how do you think that affects the plot of the 2015 romantic comedy Trainwreck starring Amy Schumer and Bill Hader, which does have both LeBron and Amari in it. How do you think the
sense that Amari's in the movie?
Well, and that LeBron is spending so much time in New York, I feel like it makes more sense.
The movie makes a lot more sense. Well, at least to the people who only watch rom-coms for the sports aspects of it.
Well, and then if LeBron's in New York, then that means that Chuck Schumer is also in the movie, right? He has to be in it. If Amari and LeBron's in New York and it's Amy's movie, then Uncle Chuck has to come through, right?
So here's a great thing, sort of unrelated to my timeline, but there was this video that the city of New York put together trying to like convince LeBron to come to New York, and it's something the Knicks showed him at his pitch meeting called Come On LeBron. And it's got, like, Michael Bloomberg just being like, come on, LeBron! And I tried to find the video.
Wait a minute. What was that voice?
Yeah, Michael.
That's Michael Bloomberg's bird-like voice.
I thought that was your Bloomberg speaking Spanish voice, but it's pretty good.
I didn't realize he was going into character. That's great.
So this video has apparently just been completely scrubbed from the internet, because I tried to find it to use it in one of the drops, and there's like the link to it on the NewYorkCity.gov page is 404, and all the videos from YouTube have been like suspended or removed by the user. So like, there, please believe me, this is not a conspiracy, that Michael Bloomberg like tried his hardest to get LeBron to New York, and in my timeline he succeeded, and that video is all over the place.
But yeah, so one thing we were originally going to have he'll pop up on a later episode, Rob Mellons, to come on the show. He couldn't make it the last minute, but he sends along, you know, the Knicks pitch meeting to LeBron, which included James Dolan reading awkwardly from prepared notes for yes, pretty much the beginning, first 15 minutes of the movie, of the meeting. You have to assume that doesn't happen, right? Because there's no way LeBron is joining up with that nonsense.
I think LeBron does it in spite of James Dolan. Like, I'm sure James Dolan was like, LeBron, you can come on stage and play with my band. And LeBron's like, I'm good with the basketball, thank you. this is like, as with anything good that happens to the Knicks, it's in spite of Dolan and the management, and not because they had this brilliant, you know, TED Talk level pitch to LeBron to get him to join up with the Knicks, or whatever like Silicon Valley bullshit the Warriors used to convince Kevin Durant, like, you can play with the three best players, and you can also have an app that seemed to work this offseason. So LeBron's joining the Knicks in spite of the front office and the management.
Now I'm picturing James Dolan come out in a black turtleneck and dad jeans. Just promo pitch to LeBron. Okay.
Yeah, so I want to. So Sam, let's get back on track. Does LeBron bring a title to the title starved Big Apple?
Yes, I mean, New York is a city that, as we know, has had such a long drought at this point. When he signed, it would have been a year since the Yankees won. It'd be another year before the Giants win a title. It's just really a title starved community that comes together as LeBron delivers them multiple rings. And the interesting part of this for the Knicks is because if you remember that season, they basically spent the first 4 months of the season sort of arguing with themselves about how much they would give up to get Carmelo Anthony to join the team from Denver. And so in my timeline, this does not happen because, first of all, they don't really have a ton of space to add him in season. And also, they already have a pretty good small forward. So the Melo stuff is put on the back burner. And because there is no trade for Melo, that means Chauncey Billups doesn't come along either because he was part of the deal, which means that after the lockout ends, the Knicks do not amnesty Chauncey Billups to sign Tyson Chandler. They just sign Tyson Chandler because they have the space to sign him. And instead, they use all these assets and picks, the Gallinari, Chandler, Mozgov, 2-1 protected first, that ended up going to Denver for Melo. Instead, that goes down south to New Orleans and helps pry Chris Paul away. And so, like in Miles' scenario, there is no Chris Paul, David Stern veto situation. Instead, he is just on board with what we really could call a four-person super team between him and LeBron, Amari, and Tyson Chandler in the paint in the Big Apple.
Really stretching the definition of super team at this point.
It's quite the squad. It's got pure offensive scoring in Stoudemire. It's got pure defensive play in Tyson Chandler, a guy who's about to win Defensive Player of the Year. And it's got two of the more cerebral players in the NBA, Chris Paul and LeBron. And you have to assume, like, with those Heat teams and with, you know, the Warriors now, you have all these hangers-on around the league who'll take a lot less money to come join up with stars of that caliber.
This seems like as good a time as any to interrupt your timeline and tell everyone the story of the time I met LeBron and Chris Paul. I'll keep it brief. I once did a gig where I was playing trombone for Maverick Carter's birthday in New York. And so LeBron and Chris Paul were both there. It was a pretty small dinner. It was maybe like 25 people. So, you know, we played a couple songs, and then I was with my band, and we all went downstairs. We're like, oh my God, did you see LeBron? He was right there. And then maybe 30 seconds later, it's kind of like a dual level venue, and we were at the bottom of the stairs, and the biggest man I've ever seen comes down. It's LeBron, and he's like, yo guys, that was great. Y'all are really good. And he gives everyone a fist bump, and fist bump me. He's like, good trombone playing. And then Chris Paul is like lurking behind him, like he's so much smaller and like doesn't have the same charisma, and he just like looks at all of us, is like, good job, but he doesn't interact any more than to just like look at us and give us like the eyebrows, and then just like moves on with his life. True story, that happened.
Nice. So we know that LeBron loves the trombone.
Yeah, well, this would not have in this timeline, LeBron would have been in New York anyway, so this still happens, which is very important.
Deprive you of meeting LeBron.
Yeah, it's very important. It's very important to me. Anyway,
over trombone music.
Hey, and ever since LeBron met me, he hasn't missed an NBA final, so that's pretty good.
Wow, that's crossing paths in the night. That's analytic.
All right, so you mentioned. Just get back on track. You mentioned Carmelo Anthony. The Knicks don't trade for him. But Melo is still unhappy in Denver. Where does he end up?
So, Melo's obviously unhappy in Denver, and he's unhappy because the Knicks are telling him, basically, you're going to have to wait till the offseason if we're going to have any chance to clear cap space for you. And if you remember, the big reason that he wanted to get traded was because at the time, with the lockout impending, he could get a max extended trade wherever he went to. And if he went waited till the offseason, he didn't know what the salary structure was going to be. And Melo's all about the money. So he's still going to force a trade somewhere. And the only suitor that's really left is a team that did pull off a big trade right before the deadline in that 2011 season and is about to go through a little bit of a rebranding, and that is East Rutherford's very own New Jersey Nets, who give up pretty much the picks that they give up, let's assume, for Deron Williams on that night. Instead, it goes to Denver and convinces Melo to come and be the face of the Brooklyn rebrand as the Nets are about to move into New York City. So he agrees to the 3-year extension, and Melo is the face of the Nets. What does this mean for the Nets? They have a decent team with Melo and Brook Lopez. More importantly, it means they have a small forward, they have big men in place, so they do not do that disastrous deal with the Boston Celtics, bringing in Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett and giving up all of their draft picks through the end of time. So in a way, LeBron going to New York helps save the Nets from themselves.
But I feel bad for Melo, though, right? Because, like, Melo, you know, he has to go live in New Jersey.
Just for 1 year. And New Jersey's pretty nice in the world. He would have been moving over. It's not like Denver's in the prize in February either.
Well,
I don't know. Denver's got culture, man.
There are things you can do in Denver that you can't do in New Jersey, Sam.
Well, not in 2011.
Like ski.
That's what you're talking about.
Well, yeah, what did y'all think I was talking about?
Oh, well, we'll explain when you're older.
You're a brownie enthusiast, I thought.
I hate chocolate. Fun fact.
So anyway, and so also with Deron Williams, who's disgruntled in Utah, after the lockout, since the Clippers obviously swing and a miss on Chris Paul, and the Nets already have their max player of the future right now, the face of their rebuild, Carmelo Anthony, that means Deron Williams ends up being part of a package that goes from Utah to the Clippers, which means that the face of Lob City is now Deron Williams instead of Chris Paul.
Yo, does that mean that Deron Williams ends up being remembered as a much better point guard than he actually was?
No, I think...
Your timeline?
I think Deron Williams ends up being a lot more scrutinized than he is. And we're going to talk about legacies in a little bit. But I think the fact that Deron Williams, like, pretty dramatically broke down after, like, his second year in Brooklyn has sort of just been swept under the rug now. And ever since they amnestied him, and he's on the Mavericks now, and sort of fell off the face of the earth. But I think in this timeline that you have a guy who's coming to a team that's ready to start winning with Blake, who was the number one pick and starting to come around, and DeAndre Jordan, who is also starting to turn into a defensive force and value finishing god, and that they're starting to put these shooters around him. And I also don't know if this is enough to entice Doc Rivers, so maybe they don't have, like, Austin Rivers and assorted trash like that. But you have Deron Williams at the face of this team in this big market that's trying to get over the hump and trying to get out of the Lakers' shadow. And I think with him that they're not going to get very far in the playoffs. Like, I mean, the Chris Paul teams haven't gone very far in the playoffs either. But if Deron Williams and this team keep losing in, like, the first round, I think that is a huge knock on his legacy, as people remember him as sort of the bust, as, like, the guy who was supposed to bring everything together and got a max deal and fell apart, as opposed to Chris Paul, and people make excuses for why the Clippers haven't gone past the second round in spite of him.
All right, so Sam, let's start wrapping up. What are some of the ancillary effects of all this around the league?
All right, so let's go back, first of all, to the Knicks and this dynasty that unfolds. And like I said earlier, like, as LeBron's on his way to winning title after title, that the Knicks have not used their amnesty provision yet. And the offseason where Melo becomes a free agent after his 3-year deal with Brooklyn is up, that's at the point where even in my magical timeline where LeBron and D'Antoni, who ends up being regarded as a legendary NBA coach, aren't able to save Amari's knees anymore, they amnesty his max money off the books, thus giving him the space to sign Carmelo away from the Nets and form the Banana Boat Trio all on one team, something that we might not even ever be able to see in real life, with Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony and LeBron all in the same starting lineup, and a team that goes on to defeat the Warriors in back-to-back NBA Finals. And this affects Carmelo's legacy, obviously, as he finally gets his ring. He finally gets, you know, even just out of the conference finals. Chris Paul, obviously, same deal, gets past the second round, has many rings. The three of them are, I guess, as well known as any athletes on the planet, three superstars who win championships in New York City, spraying Banana Boat sunscreen into the crowd as they parade down the Canyon of Heroes in downtown New York. And around the league also, there is sort of this, you know, how do we stop them? Do we just wait for them to retire and move on? And I do think that one ancillary effect from this, since we're asking, is Kevin Durant's decision to join up with Golden State, which still is going to happen in this timeline, which sucks for me personally. It still happens, but it's not met with as much derision, because there's all these people who are mad at these players for teaming up, for, you know, for LeBron leaving Cleveland in the first place, and there hasn't really been any forgiveness process since he's staying in New York and winning all these rings. And Melo, you know, hopping around from Denver to Brooklyn to the Knicks and finally getting his championships as part of the super team, that people see that it's extremely hard to crack open the window while this Knicks God squad exists. And so for Durant to say, I'm going to jump ship from this incredible Thunder team to an even better Warriors team that's still just lost to the Knicks, I think people are met with, okay, you're really trying to put a challenge and stop this, you know, five-time defending champion dynasty, as opposed to, oh, you bailed on the Thunder, a team that could have beaten the Warriors, but now you've sort of crippled them, and you're a big loser because you just joined a team that won 73 wins, but then they blew a 3-1 lead in the finals, and you ruined July 4th for Sam forever. But aside from that, I think that the timelines are a little different. And one final point I want to make is about legendary former Bulls and Lakers head coach Phil Jackson, who, while we were on the subject of Knicks mismanagement, I wanted to bring this up, but I'll save it for now, that because the Knicks sort of blew everything up after their one, I guess, decent season with Melo in real life, where they got to the second round and they lost to the Pacers with that 50-plus win squad with Jason Kidd and all the other players they cobbled together. They brought in Phil Jackson after the next season, and the season after that went downhill before he drafted Porzingis. Instead, there's no reason for Phil Jackson to go to New York because that team is incredible, and we all know LeBron's going to be the GM anyway. So Phil instead goes to take over the Lakers, who are still bad, because Kobe is still bad at the end of his career. And it's now become Phil's goal to help rebuild the Lakers from within and sort of keep the Bus brother and sisters from fighting with each other and make the Lakers great again.
Oh, well, I'm sure he does a good job there. I want to say, just to go back to Sam's July 4th being ruined, I had a sudden flash of you tweeting in kind of a Bill Simmons-esque way, you know, I will never like July 4th. It will always be the day KD left. True Thunder fans know what I mean, you know?
Oh, my God. I'm going to Bill Simmons on this podcast again.
Well, you know, you brought this on yourself.
Ruin the holiday. And it's the only way that this can ever be, like, remedied is if they, like, he comes back to them on a July 4th, or like they sign like Paul George or like LeBron Jr. in 10 years.
What if they move back to Seattle? But what if they move back to Seattle on July 4th, but nothing else changes?
I mean, that's fine. I mean, I didn't root for them because I was from Seattle or anything. So they can move to, you know, Montana or whatever on July 4th, whatever. Just something that's like, oh, July 4th, I don't see on my time hop next year like 15 sad tweets from Sam about how Durant's going to the Warriors.
I like the idea that Montana would have a professional basketball team, though. All right, let's call it there. You have anything else, or are you resting your case?
I am going to rest my case and apologize to the city of Cleveland, because not only do you lose LeBron, that you don't get to have this huge redemption of LeBron coming back and coming down from, coming back from 3-1 down, and instead you just have to be those annoying, sad Midwestern people who watch a team from New York become great. So
the economically anxious.
Yes. You know they're especially economically anxious since LeBron and Chris Paul and them are winning in New York.
Yeah.
A lot of anxiety, yeah. There, economically speaking.
Of the economic variety.
Yeah, of course.
All right, so, well, I mean, we should ask the question of where Porzingis would have ended up, but we're past time here. Let me just wrap it up and then declare a winner. I feel like this is like the scene in Chopped, right, where the judges have their meals and, you know, the annoying chefs are like, I don't think you put enough cheese in this or whatever. That's just, I want everyone to, I don't have the music or anything, but I want everyone to imagine that this is what's happening right here. Okay. Big fan of...
I'm gonna co-host an episode.
The secret ingredient is... That's what we should do is we should just say... we should pick, like, a random basketball player and say, like, you have to address how this person's life would have changed. Like, Chopped grab that. Yeah. I wasn't joking. I actually think that's a good idea.
No,
all right.
All right, go. Dellavedova.
Australia.
Yeah, he never gets to America. All right, so...
I forgot to point out before you jump in. We were talking about my good friend Jeremy Lin earlier. Linsanity probably doesn't happen if LeBron thing happens. LeBron doesn't get hurt like Melo does, and they have Chris Paul. They don't need another point guard. Like, Linsanity just does not happen.
And some background as to why this is even relevant at all. Before we came on, Sam tells a story about meeting Jeremy Lin and asking him... Unequivocally, do you remember Linsanity? That was so cool. Everybody was so happy for you when it happened. So what you're saying, though, is that if LeBron does decide to do the things in your timeline, that you never get to meet Jeremy Lin and ask him if he remembered playing for the Knicks?
Yeah, well, he wouldn't remember playing for the Knicks.
Make it sound like it was like a sit-down meeting and not just me like encountering him on Houston Street at 1 in the morning.
I mean, that was basically how James Dolan met him, right? There's no way that he held a meeting with Jeremy Lin. He just saw him outside on Houston and was like, hey, you should come play for us. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah. All right. I'm banging the gavel. I want to say I think you both did a really great job this week. Lots of good stuff I like in here. I'm a big fan of all the different things, the Miles's David Stern stuff, our little digression about burning jerseys, that was really nice. Feel bad for Cleveland and Miles' timeline, that's really shitty. Feel bad for Cleveland and Sam's tiding. Really, what I think we figured out is that this one timeline is the only timeline where it worked out for Cleveland. And it's kind of a miracle that that's the timeline we ended up in, because, you know, traditionally Cleveland is forever on the darkest timeline. I'm a little skeptical of this, like, the Knicks get Melo in 2015 and start bulldozing everyone on Sam's timeline. But there is also a ton of good stuff in here. I liked all of our digressions. And it's really, in my opinion, too close to call. So I'm going to give the win this week to Sam, just because I don't know, I think I laughed a little bit more in that section of the podcast. It's a Christmas miracle. You know, we can't have the Washington Generals have to win every now and then.
Yeah, that's
they
true.
They don't. I think that's the point.
Wait, what night of Hanukkah is there like a special sort of, like, what do you celebrate on this day specifically?
No, it's just the whole 8 days is a celebration, Miles.
Oh, okay. It's not like Kwanzaa where there's like each day means a certain thing.
No, it's I mean, you light one more candle each night.
Well, there needs to be some type of, like, Sam 1 on the fourth night of Hanukkah, like, told into the lore of the rest of the holiday. Henceforth.
On the fourth night of Hanukkah, basketball court brought a partridge and a pear tree. Now, getting my holidays confused. All right, we've been going on for about 50 minutes, so it's time to wrap up. You can listen to Basketball Court. Well, if you're listening to it right now, you already know where to find it, but iTunes, Podomatic. You can hit us up on Twitter. That's at B-Ball Court Pod. We have a Facebook page, Basketball Court Podcast. We have, I guess, a Gmail account, basketballcourtpodcast@gmail.com. Always feel free to get in touch with us and tell us how bad we are at this, or if you have other ideas of, you know, of things that we should try to do. Try to keep the podcast going. We're going to, I promise, we try to be a little bit more regular with these things as we get into the next section of, you know, we've done 6 episodes and we're coming up on the 1-year anniversary of the podcast launch. So maybe slightly more regular in the year 2017. But, you know, if you listen, thanks very much for listening. We wish you all a very happy holidays and a pleasant new year. Hopefully 2017 will not be dreadful. Like this last year was. So yeah,
hopefully July 4th's better.
Yeah, there's a lot of days it could be better, I think. All right, so Miles, thank you very much for your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And Sam, congratulations on obtaining a positive judgment here in Basketball Court.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a very long time, so I don't really know how to react.
All right, I've been Judge Peter Andrews. Court is adjourned.